Welcome to Breaking Doctrine, presented to you by the Combined Arms Doctrine Directorate at the Combined Arms Center at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. The views expressed here are those of the individual and do not represent the views of the Combined Arms Center, U.S. Army, or U.S. government.
Welcome to Breaking Doctrine, a U.S. Army Combined Arms Center podcast on emerging doctrine and the Army's vision of warfare. Hello, I'm Lieutenant Colonel Lisa Becker, and I'm your host through our 12 Days of Doctrine. Today, on the 11th day of Doctrine, Special Doctrine Division is giving to you, our listeners, an olive branch. Now, as members of the Army, we stay more focused on fighting and winning our nation's wars, and probably less focused on extending an olive branch in peace. In today's episode, I sit down with Mr. Mark Murphy from the U.S. Army Peacekeeping and Stability Operations Institute, PKSOI. Although I've heard of the organization, I knew little about the work at PKSOI. Maybe you're in the same boat. By the end of this episode, I hope you learn more about PKSOI, their organization, how they collaborate with the Security Force Assistance Command, their role in civilian harm mitigation response, and their work on resilience doctrine.
Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
You know, I think a good way to start our conversation is just if you could talk about PKSOI, maybe the history of the organization and a little bit, because I feel like I'm probably not the only one with our listeners that doesn't know a lot about PKSOI.
So we just celebrated our 30th anniversary last year. We were the brainchild of the Chief of Staff of the Army at the time, General Gordon Sullivan. This is at the end of the Cold War. Russia's collapsed. We had done Operation Just Cause. We'd just come out of Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and we were essentially the military hegemon within the global sphere. But General Sullivan understood that we were probably not going to be fighting a near-peer competitor in the near future. What he envisioned was we were going to be more involved in small wars, military operations other than war. And so when he initially established PKSOI, he established it as the U.S. Army Peacekeeping Institute, in order to build a repository of knowledge to go ahead and deal with peace operations similar to what we saw in the 90s with Haiti and Kosovo and some of the other things that happened during that time frame. And then in 2004, after we had gone into Afghanistan and Iraq, General Schumacher at that time said, okay, we're having issues here with understanding how do we stabilize a country or an area. And so he added stability operations to PKSOI's remit. And that's what we've been doing essentially for the last 30 years over the course of our history. We are the Army and Joint Proponent for Stabilization and Peace Operations. And just recently, General Beagle made the decision to go and also make us the Army Proponent for Security Force Assistance. We do a number of different things. We have several focus areas that we work on. Those include doctrine and concepts, training and exercises, leadership and education, and support to policy.
Because you work on several focus areas, I imagine that you have relationships with many different organizations. Can you talk about those organizations with which you crosstalk?
So I've already mentioned that we are the Army and Joint Proponent for Stabilization and Peace Operations, the Army Proponent for Security Force Assistance. We are also a designated NATO Partnership Training Education Center. We're the head of delegation for the U.S. for the International Association of Peacekeeping Training Centers. And we also work very closely with the UN and have in the past worked very closely with them on helping them update their doctrine. I'll give an example. The UN Infantry Battalion Manual, which we helped update a couple of years ago and is getting ready to undergo another revision, we helped reach out to the doctrine community, to the various centers of excellence, to go and find the requisite subject matter expertise to help us with revising that particular piece of doctrine so that it can then be presented back to the UN.
We recently sat down with Colonel Teague, the 5th SFAB commander. Within that conversation, we talked a bit about FM3-22 and Security Force Assistance. Do you work with the Security Force Assistance Command too?
So we work closely with the SFAC and the SFABs. We have provided subject matter expertise training for the SFAC and the SFABs, predominantly the SFABs, to introduce them to the whole concept of UN peace operations, what they are and what they are not. But we've also touched on stabilization with the SFABs, so they have a better understanding of the concepts and tenets that go along with that, and also to get them to better understand the differences between U.S. doctrine and UN doctrine when they're out doing theater security cooperation exercises, especially within the AFRICOM AOR, because many of the things that they do are in support of partners and allies who may be preparing to participate in a UN peace operation as a troop contributing country. So that's where a lot of our primary efforts go.
I'd like to draw on another episode that we had maybe a year ago with two judge advocate generals. They were discussing new policies coming into effect regarding civilian harm mitigation and response. And, you know, in that conversation, we were really focused on that CHMR as policy alongside the law of armed conflict. So does PKSOI play a role within CHMR? Because I would like to kind of continue that conversation, not necessarily from a legal perspective, but what your role is in CHMR.
So a little bit of background on this. So in January of 2022, the SECDEF issued guidance to go ahead and develop a civilian harm mitigation response action plan. That particular document was released in August of 22, so roughly about 8 months from the initial directive from the Secretary of Defense to the document actually being released. And the whole idea behind the Civilian Harm Mitigation Response Action Plan is to try to ensure that the law of war and the law of armed conflict, there were gaps that were happening operationally that were resulting in civilian harm. One example that comes to mind is there was a fuel convoy in Afghanistan that was struck militarily, and it resulted in significant casualties. It was a misidentification. It was essentially a friendly fire incident because a number of civilians were killed. And there were several other incidents that occurred during the course of military operations, and the Secretary of Defense wanted to see what we could do to ensure that we could do better to go ahead and mitigate civilian harm. So the Civilian Harm Mitigation Response Action Plan touches across the .NLPF for the Department of Defense, and also it's filtering down to the Joint Force as well. It covers the establishment of a Civilian Protection Center of Excellence, which is a DRU to Army G357 down in the Pentagon. It touches on doctrine, PME, education, security cooperation, working with allies and partners to help them establish procedures to go ahead and mitigate civilian harm. There's a total of 11 objectives that are contained in the CHMRAP, so those are just a couple. One additional one is the establishment of a Red Team School, which is actually located out here at Fort Leavenworth, in order to not just do the traditional red team type of activities that a red team normally does, but to work on how do you mitigate cognitive bias.
Mm-hmm. And then PKSOI, you work, what's your relationship with that? Because you know a lot about it.
we collaborate with the CPCOE. The CPCOE is still a fairly new organization, and they're still trying to get their legs kind of underneath them. But we are the Army OPR for Protection and Surveillance in the context of peace operations, genocide, mass atrocity response operations, not so much on the kinetic side, which is where the CPCOE is focused. And also, they also have a role in the non-kinetic side. But we're very much focused on protection and surveillance, more from a peace operations standpoint.
Wow, we've talked a lot of different things, but less on your doctrinal work. What publications are you looking at now?
So FM 307 and ADP 307 are both titled Stability.
Stability, okay.
And FM 307 was updated in 2014. The other one I think that will be a priority for us in the future here is ATP Threat 3Tag 07.5, which is Stability Techniques. A couple of other things I'd like to mention concerning efforts that we have ongoing right now is two efforts that we're working. One is developing a defense support to stabilization framework, which was something that was listed in DoD Directive 3000.05. So we're actually trying to flush that out a little bit more. And we're also looking at developing a joint doctrine note for resilience. NATO has developed a resilience concept, which is very, very much focused on how does whole of society deal with a catastrophic event. And we're looking at a similar type concept in the terms of stabilization to help partners and allies or in conflict zones. How do you develop the resilience to go and deal with shocks to the system so you can have that security and stability within a given area?
That's so interesting to me because resilience is kind of I don't want to say buzzword, but maybe it is a buzzword, in the wake of social media and mental health is kind of where I hear resiliency. I'd never thought, like, hey, the Army has a role in building doctrine to talk about resiliency.
This has been a major effort with NATO for the last couple of years, but we have nothing similar here within the United States for our doctrine. And that's one reason that we've kind of taken this on, and we're in the process of trying to flush this out. So we're working with Joint Staff J7. They'll be the Joint Staff Doctrine sponsor. And as I said, we're developing the resilience concept that will hopefully be included in a joint doctrine note at some point in the future here.
So what drove NATO to build this resilience doctrine?
Events over the last 10 years, essentially going back to the Russian invasion of or occupation of Crimea and everything that's transpired within the European context over the intervening period since 2014, as well as the Baltic states have really been at the forefront of this based on the threats that they face being right on the border with Russia. And so NATO is kind of taking this on to go and take a look at it.
Well, Mr. Murphy, thanks for sitting down with us and making us more aware of the great work going on at your organization.
Well, thanks. I appreciate the opportunity to go and sit in here with you. Thank you very much.
Just like writing new doctrine is a team effort, breaking doctrine takes a team. Without the Kern Special Doctrine Division here at CAD, we wouldn't be able to bring you this show. Please don't forget to subscribe on Amazon Music, Apple, Odyssey, Audible, Spotify, or YouTube. Also, go ahead and follow us on social media at U.S. Army Doctrine to get updates on new podcasts, Doctrine Digest videos, and publications. Finally, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the official position of the United States Army, the U.S. Army Training and Doctrine Command, or the Combined Arms Center. I'm Lieutenant Colonel Lisa Becker, and this has been Breaking Doctrine.